If we get extinct again, like what happened to the dinosaurs 65 million years ago, do you think it's possible to rerun the evolution, something like what we've seen already?
It's happened enough times in the past that we can look at what did happen before and show that there is a sort of pattern, a sort of repeatability. The other thing, as I said in my lecture today, is that after the dinosaurs went extinct, the mammals rose about five times independently in Australia, in South America, in Eurasia, in Africa, in Madagascar.
Can you give some examples of that?
Well, in Australia, for example, there were nothing but marsupials. And so in Australia, the marsupials radiated, evolutionarily speaking, and filled all the niches which were independently being filled in the old world. So we had marsupial wolves, marsupial tree gliders, flying squirrels, marsupial moles, marsupial mice, marsupial rabbits. And these all were a bit different from the old world equivalents, but nevertheless they were recognizably similar because they had the same kind of way of life. And so you had carnivores and herbivores and insectivores and burrowers and gliders and swimmers. And that you would expect to happen again. So if the present mammal population was wiped out by another catastrophe, similar to the catastrophe that wiped out the dinosaurs, then I think we can predict in general that you would get the same broad pattern of ranges of trades being filled as the mammals filled in all those different continents and as the dinosaurs themselves filled before they went extinct and as the mammal-like reptiles before the dinosaurs. The same pattern happens again and again.
So that's the big trades, like flying, like our eyes. You said today that our eyes really have, or eyes have developed 40 times.
Well, this was a second way of thinking about the rerunning of evolution. Instead of looking at different continents, look at different organs. How often has the eye evolved? And it's been calculated that the eye has evolved at least 40 times independently around the animal kingdom, which suggests that there's something sort of eager to evolve. Eyes are very likely to evolve, and if you could rerun evolution again, you could predict that eyes would certainly evolve because it's happened so many times before. I was discussing in my lecture the number of times that various things had evolved. Like eyes have evolved 40 times. Echolocation, sonar, what bats do, has evolved about four times. Flight, true flight, has evolved four times. So there's a huge difference between eyes and sonar. I then asked, well, are there some things which have only once evolved? And one of them was the diving bell spider, which has this extraordinary habit of carrying air under the water. Lots of animals that have gone back to the water, having evolved air breathing, still need to breathe air. They can't go back to breathing water like their original ancestors did. And several insects, for example, carry a bubble of air around with them on the hairs on the body. This diving bell spider, Argyroneta, not only does that, it carries the bubble of air underwater and adds it to a big bubble of air, which is its diving bell, lodged in a plant underwater. So it builds this great big bubble of air, which it then sits in and brings prey to. So this seems to be one example of a unique evolutionary adaptation that's only ever evolved once.
But talking about unique, our intelligence is unique. But you were saying today that, you know, if the dinosaurs could have continued, they wouldn't have been, or if they hadn't been wiped out, maybe they could have developed intelligence like ours. That was a very interesting thought.
It has been suggested that bipedal, well, dinosaurs already were bipedal, I mean, and lots of them were, and birds probably should be thought of as surviving dinosaurs walking on two legs. Maybe they could have evolved intelligent human-like two-legged dinosaurs. Yes, it's a nice thought. On the other hand, they were around for an awful long time, and they didn't. Mm. So there's no, it's not like eyes, where you feel there's a kind of almost inevitability that eyes will evolve. Intelligence doesn't seem to have evolved more than once, a human level of intelligence. So maybe there isn't that the same pressure to evolve it. Maybe intelligence is not that great a thing to have, otherwise it would have evolved more often.
You were raising a question today, and we were saying, what in the history of evolution has never happened? I've never thought of that.
Well, you can think of clever human inventions like radio or fire.
The ability to make fire.
Ability to make fire or use of electricity or something for electronics. Yes, I mean, it's not obvious why the things that have evolved were the things that did evolve. Some things apparently never did evolve. The wheel seems to have evolved only once, apart from in humans, in bacteria. And you might ask why. Why haven't vertebrates evolved the wheel? And I think if you think about a big wheel, imagine something like a horse going along on wheels, how would you get the nerves and the blood vessels out to the wheel? They'd just get twisted round and round the axle. The reason it works with bacteria is that you don't need blood vessels. There's no such thing as a blood vessel in bacteria anyway, so it sort of works. But a wheel is something which is genuinely unevolvable, probably, because the intermediate stages could never have survived.
How did the creationists evolve?
Through ignorance, probably, through lack of proper education. It's really, well, or you could say, why have they survived to this day through ignorance? Why did they evolve in the first place? I think if you're naive and you don't have a proper scientific account of why living things exist, it would be natural to assume that they were designed because humans are so used to the idea that complicated things are designed. Everything that we see around us in the human civilized world is designed. Machines and things like that are all designed. So it's natural when you see something like an eye to think that, like a telescope, it must have been designed.
Do you think that evolution is random, or is it directed in any way?
There are aspects of it that are certainly random, like mutation, although even that is not random in the sense that it's uncaused. Mutation is caused, but it's random in the sense that it's not directed towards improvement. Evolution is directed towards improvement by natural selection, but that's different from being directed in the sense of deliberate, foresightful direction. When a human designer designs something, he designs it with foresight, looking to the future, saying this is how it will work, drawing things out on the drawing board with a view to making them work in the future. That's not how natural selection works. Nevertheless, it produces a very good simulacrum of design. So something like an eye or a bird's wing looks very much as though it had been designed, and it has the same kind of features as an engineer recognizes as good design, but it's not directed. On the other hand, it's not random either. Natural selection is kind of something else. It's a third way, and a very important third way. In a way, it's not surprising that it took until the middle of the 19th century for somebody to think of it. It is a very counterintuitive idea. Once you have thought of it, it sounds pretty obvious.
Do you think that evolution is happening other places outside our planet, out there in the universe?
There's a sort of principle born of long historical lessons that we shouldn't assume that there's anything very unique about our own planet. I mean, it used to be thought that this was the center of the universe, and Copernicus and Galileo blew that one up. And then later Hubble showed that not even this galaxy is the center of the universe. So by the same token, people are naturally nowadays very cautious about suggesting that life is unique on this planet. And so it seems a very wise thing to believe that there must be life on other planets as well. And I believe that. But it's not totally obvious. And actually, it could be that we are unique on this planet. Could be that there is no other life anywhere in the universe. And that does have very interesting consequences, because what it means is that the chemical event which was the origin of life on this planet could have been a quite staggeringly improbable event. And that would mean that when we try to, as chemists, when chemists try to work out how the origin of life happened, it could be that this is a complete and utter waste of time. Because if there is only one example of life anywhere in the universe, then it would be positively surprising if chemists could reduplicate the event in the lab. It should be so improbable, remembering how many billions upon billions of planets there are, it should be quite laughably, ludicrously, stunningly improbable that life could evolve, and no chemist could possibly succeed in doing it. So I find that it's pretty interesting, whichever way you look at it. It's a lovely thought to think that there are other life forms around the universe, maybe intelligent life forms, very different from us, though presumably converging upon the same scientific understanding, the laws of physics, because they're universal. At the same time, it's just as exciting to think that we could be totally unique, and that has other implications for our understanding of the origin of life. It means that the origin of life could be a very, very, very improbable event and not the sort of thing we could ever possibly expect to duplicate.
But now you're talking about life existing on kind of a chemical starting point, but it could be that life exists and it's just completely different from anything that we could think of here.
Yes, it could be so different it's not even chemistry.
Yeah.
Yes, that's also possible. And almost by definition, we can't imagine what it might be like. And so we kind of have to resort to the imagination of a science fiction writer. That is theoretically possible. My guess is that it's more likely to be at least somewhat similar to what happened here, which was a chemical event in the sea. But it could be something very different, as you say.
You were saying that this is the first and only time in evolutionary history, as far as we know, that intelligence like ours has evolved. Where do you think humans are going from here?
It's very difficult to predict where humans are going. I don't think it's likely that humans are going to evolve any further in the biological sense. I don't think we're going to get humans with heads twice as big as ours are or anything like that. I think the only sort of forecast one can make about humans is cultural forecasts, and clearly human technology is evolving in a non-biological way at a colossal speed. And the speed has even been measured in computer technology, which is the fastest growing of human technologies, where Moore's law, which is an empirical law, states that computer power, measured in various ways, doubles every 18 months, which is an exponential rate of increase, and it's quite staggering. That may go on for quite a while yet. And it's pretty safe to say that in the next, on a timescale of years and decades, human life is going to change very dramatically because of technological, cultural evolution. But as I said, as for biological evolution, which is the subject that I'm qualified to speak on, unlike cultural evolution, I don't think it's possible to predict that any particular evolutionary direction will happen. It's much more likely that humans will go extinct. Almost all species have gone extinct. Just a tiny minority have managed to hang on and evolve into something else.
But do you think that's pretty close, that we're going extinct?
Not necessarily pretty close, and it could be. We're such a unique species anyway that we might manage to resist extinction in ways that other species haven't by the use of technology. That is a possibility too.
But we have, in a way, kind of set ourselves outside the natural selection. You would have died earlier from a heart that didn't function. Now you can get an artificial heart. Doesn't that do something to evolution?
Yes, I think it is true that medical science has done a dramatic thing to the to evolution. In a sense, it's cut us off from natural selection. No doubt there are other kinds of natural selection going on. Remember that survival isn't the only thing in natural selection. Survival is just a means to the end of reproduction. And not everybody has the same number of offspring. So you could ask the question, is there any genetic component to the difference between people who have many children and those who have none? Yeah. And if there is a genetic component, by definition, that is natural selection. But in order to give rise to evolutionary change, that would have to be sustained for a very large number of years. And because technology advances so fast and culture changes so fast in historical time, whatever it is that causes some people to have lots of children and some few today, it's unlikely to be the same thing in even 50 years' time, let alone a sort of more evolutionary timescale. So I don't think you can really forecast anything about the way human evolution will go.
Richard Dawkins, what kind of thoughts make you really fly away or take off or fascinates you?
the very existence of life, this prodigiously complicated set of entities, living organisms, arising out of virtually nothing, arising out of the simplicity of physics, it is an enormous privilege. It really does make one take off to think of being a part of that. In a way, that's almost circular, because you couldn't think of it if we hadn't been a part of it. So by definition, we have to be part of an evolving system which gives rise to the sort of brain that can comprehend it. That doesn't make it any the less amazing and wonderful, and I never seem to get used to it.
What frightens you?
Well, quite a lot frightens me about what's going on in the world today. Dogmatic faith frightens me. I'm frightened of the way people, especially people who have influence in the world today, both in America and in the Islamic world, are driven not by reason, not by thought, not by evidence, but by blind faith. And that seems to me to be a recipe for disaster unless we do something about it, and I am afraid of that.